You know that one of the things that I've been thinking about, if I could share with you, it has to do with the very heart of human reality. That is our consciousness. Some of you who've been in the classes and the courses before will recall that we've discussed this in other moments. In the writings, we're told that existence, creation, is an emanation from God. All creation emanates from God. There is no source but Him. And He is the source of all things. So one has the image of something flowing from a point or flowing from a center. That central orb of the universe, so to speak, as Baha'u'llah refers to it in the Book of Certitude. That not, rather than having made a creation like we might make a cake and put it on the table and admire it and then get distracted with something else and leave it to go stale. Far from that, the concept of creation in the Baha'i writings is that everything is constantly radiating and sustained, emanating from the power of God. And one of the emanations, Abdu'l-Bahá says, of this power is the human soul. So rather than conceiving of ourselves as something cut off from the power of God, or something running around who might receive the rain of God's grace on our head once in a while, but sometimes be out of touch, if we realize that the central core of our being, our innermost reality, actually is an extension of the light of God, like a ray or a beam that's come off of the sun, that somehow or another we have conceived as being independent and separate from the sun. If we could but become quiet, we could feel this emanation of divinity through our being and identify with it and begin from that point to see creation as also proceeding from His presence. In fact, seeing everything as if it were flowing from God. Not that it is God. It's like the speech of a person or the breath of a person. It emanates from them and it's sustained by them, and yet it doesn't rob anything from the original source. God is not in need of creation, and yet because of His love for creation, He has created it and He sustains it. This seems to me to coincide with a very interesting passage in one of the letters of the Guardian, where he speaks about the fact that in dreams the human reality can receive inspiration from God. Shoghi Effendi says that, however, we should be cautious about the inspiration we receive in dreams, because our consciousness too often is possessed of opinions and views and prejudices and loves and hatreds which warp and distort the influence of that inspiration. Then he goes on to say that man indeed in wakeful hours receives the same inspiration, and implies that it is because of these positions, these attachments, these illusions, these vain desires, these idle fancies, which we see repeated so much in the prayers, and we wonder, what is he talking about? Keep us from conceiving divine truth inspired or breathed into our very being at every moment from the source of revelation, from the source of creation. it would appear that the emphasis in the holy writings on severance and detachment has to do with this cleansing of the heart, cleansing of the mirror of human reality, washing ourselves of these acquired and accumulated dusts and encumbrances, so that we can be vitalized by something that's constantly flowing over us or into us or through us. This turning to God seems to be the turning towards an awareness, or this becoming aware of this flow of grace which sustains our very being and in a sense is our very being. We're told that man's reality consists of, or his soul consists of three facets, if you will, soul, mind, and spirit. Soul, when this is broken down, human spirit, rational soul, are synonymous in most passages. But several times Abdu'l-Bahá opens these and defines them in a little more specific manner. The soul he speaks of as the power that sustains human life, and in a sense is that power which runs the autonomic functions that we need for the body. It is the cause of the collection of the atoms of existence. It holds together all the cells of the body. It directs all of its operations. After all, we don't busy ourselves after dinner with digesting our food. Some other intelligence is dealing with this. And these are the powers inherent in the soul, some of the powers, that are directed towards that kind of function, that cause the beating of the heart and the pulsing of the blood and so many different things that are constantly going on. The distribution of liquid over the globe of our eyes so that it will be lubricated and be able to see. So how many endless things that we can't even think of. The growing of our hair, some of us. So this is the soul. Then he says the mind, which he says is the fruit of the soul, is the highest expression or quality of the soul. Rationality, the power of weighing and reasoning things. The servant, if I might say, the servant of the love of one's life. This is a curious thing. Reason is usually the maidservant of will. We like to think that we're very rational human beings. But as we don't always have control of our wills or have them submitted to the will of God, we find reason sustaining and supporting us in the most outrageous projects of life. Because, for instance, we fall in love with someone, appropriately or inappropriately, the reason will come and will tell us that this is the fruit of existence. This is the best thing that could happen. How can you deprive yourself of such a joy and bounty? And so all reasoning's powers will line themselves up behind one's passion or one's will. One should be aware of this, you know, because we, in the West, we pride ourselves on being reasonable, balanced human beings. But whenever passion comes into the thing, all the reason goes crazy. Now, this is why we have prayers and all the other things, to bring us, to move us towards this will of God, His purpose for us. And it's only under the illumination of divine confirmation that reason operates correctly and legitimately in human reality. Otherwise, it's a maverick. You don't know what it's going to tell you to do next. The third aspect in these three is spirit. And Abdu'l-Bahá says this is the power that connects us with the Supreme Concourse. This seems to be the soul defined as that ray, as that emanation, as that connective line from higher reality down to this mortal world. In one tablet asked about the soul, Abdu'l-Bahá said that the soul cannot be described. But then he goes on and describes it. He says, it's a dazzling pencil of light. Now, when you think of this emanation from God, here we are, shimmering radiance from the power of divinity expressed into the world of creation. The soul, Baha'u'llah tells us, is the human soul, is the highest and most unique reality in creation. Why? Because it potentially has the capacity of being expressive of all the names and attributes of God. Now, we should conceive of names and attributes of God as the powers and realities flowing from God. He tells us that everything has these signs of the names and attributes of God within it. But man has the signs of all the names and attributes of God within him. So, what flows from God, as I understand it, is the influence of these divine names and attributes. And though all of us possess all of these names and attributes, it's possible for us to reflect and express them in life, the measure of them is different. First of all, the quantity of how much is coming to you is different between different souls. Second, the distribution of how much of that energy is one name or another name is different. So that it's the, if you will, the harmony and blending of these divine names in different proportions within human souls that make us different realities, that make all of us interesting and distinct one from another. Now, he says that man is the image and likeness of God. And then when Abdu'l-Bahá was asked, what does this biblical reference mean? He said it means we are the mere image of the names and attributes of the manifestations of God. They are the embodiment of these divine names and we are the mere reflection. They are like the sun of the names and attributes of God and we're like the moon or satellites that can reflect that light. And it's because of this, I think, that Baha'u'llah has said they are potentially within us. If the mirror of our being doesn't turn towards it, it doesn't reflect them in this full and manifest way. And he says, in that case, then man is really nothing more than an animal. He may be a reasoning animal, but he reasons for the purpose of his animal existence rather than for some higher aim or intent. So all of our service and our prayers and our meditations and our efforts to study and penetrate the writings act as a burnish on the mirror of our spirit so that we can become open channels and receive this light that's flowing from the reality of Baha'u'llah. And as we look at the text, be filled with the divine significances and hidden mysteries that are latent in these texts, which their rehearsal, either recitation or lecture or reading, evokes or awakens somehow in our souls. All of this depends to what degree we sever and detach ourselves from the ways of our forefathers, from the ways of the societies we've been born in, from all of these things which we think our human life. And to the degree we can free ourselves from such fetters, such limitations, to that degree will we be able to become expressive of the great power of the cause and assist in fulfilling Baha'u'llah's purpose in human existence, in building up society, and so on. Abdu'l-Bahá says that the relationship of the human soul to the body is similar to the relationship of the Holy Spirit to the body of mankind. If the human body is sluggish, if it's ill, if it's weak, if it's feeble, the expression of the soul through it is limited and hampered. But if it acquires strength and health and vitality, then the full influence of the soul acts through it. In the same way, human society, in that case, each of us being the individual cells, to the degree that we become reflective of the influence of the Holy Spirit, that is, of the spirit of the manifestation of God and His principles, to the degree that we're animated and vibrating with that as a collective body within the world, to that degree, the purpose of God for civilization, for the collectivity of mankind, will appear in the world. This is why it's never going to be enough for us to just give lip service to the cause. Until we become the embodiment of this revelation of Baha'u'llah, of this revealing of divine light and glory, we won't understand in what way the soul of mankind, the world soul, will knit the cells of this being of humankind together into new functions, into new organisms. This whole question that this is an organically evolving world order of Baha'u'llah is implied in these writings of Abdul Baha or in his talks, it seems to me. So to the degree which we grow in affection for each other, in attraction to the revelation, to that degree we will become the embodiment of powers which will reveal themselves as institutions or as collective expressions of the purpose of God. And this is this very special kind of blessing that's coming to the world in this day and is the sign of its maturity and its coming of age. That this organism of the human body all over the world is going to begin to pulse to the same divine rhythm. And as it develops over the next 1,000 years and then through the vast courses of time, over 500,000 years under the influence of Baha'u'llah's initial impulse, it will become the means for establishing the kingdom on high in the earth below. Now, our little lives here are to contribute something to that. And our eternal glory and our pride and our honor will rest in nothing else but what we've given and helped this cause for. Every other activity that we have will fade away. And how blessed we all are that we should be here at the very threshold of the kingdom, here at the center of the world, and able to do whatever we do, and it doesn't matter what we're doing, but be able to serve here and pour our lives into the building up of this foundation. This is such an opportunity, I'm sure, as we all thank Baha'u'llah for every day. If just the recognition of the cause, Abdul Baha says, if just the fact that he has allowed you to recognize the revelation, Abdul Baha says, if we prostrated ourselves repeatedly, or 10,000 times, he says in another tablet, would be insufficient thanks for having simply been made the recipients of the revelation. Already that is accompanied by imperishable honor and eternal sovereignty, he says in one tablet. Just to recognize. How many people in the world are not recognizing Baha'u'llah's coming? What a little handful we are that have recognized. The Dawnbreakers recounts the lives of those first heroes animated by that spirit. In our own time, we're going to have a second volume of Dawnbreakers based on the trials, the heroism, the triumph of this recent wave of martyrs in the cradle of the faith and of all those that have been suffering under the persecutions of a relentless enemy, really. Who knows how much this persecution and the accompanying opportunities and grace and power which it releases into the world will spread to other countries in the decades immediately ahead of us. Who knows what role those of us that are seated in this room, that are here tonight, will play in the weavings of destiny. But one thing you can be sure of, you're really on the right path. I'm going the right direction by being here and giving your time and services to the cause here. I think that, if I could add a personal remark, the most exciting moments in the House of Justice are those moments when we receive and say goodbye to the friends serving at the World Center. All of it's exciting, but that's especially exciting because it confirms the feelings of the body by seeing the devotion and the vision and the wonder in the spiritual receptivity and attitude of the friends as they come in and out of the council chamber. And many of you will have experienced that already, or perhaps will experience it in the future. I hope that you'll have that. Obviously, that's nothing compared to the bounty that you have of attaining to the holy shrines. But it's something special, I can tell you, it's something special for the members of the House of Justice, especially the neophyte members. So I'm sorry that it's taken so long to renew this class and to come back together and talk about some of these deeper things of life, but I hope that we'll be able to continue in the fall. I'm not sure whether it's going to be Monday night, because Monday is a meeting day. And somehow at the end of a meeting day, for some of the weaker ones, there's not much left. But I think we should be able to work something out, and I hope we will have many more hours together to consider the greatness and the beauty of this space.